that was a caddy up at Oakland Hills back in the day. Well, not back in the day. And he's going to chime in from time to time. I call him the Big O. Say hello to Beth.
Hi, Beth. How's it going?
Hey, Big O.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, this kid's got some great stories to share with us about being a caddy up there at Oakland Hills and the tragedy that took place up there burning down. But let's go back to you brought up in St. Pete. You're a Boca Ciega Lady Pirate. And then you went to Wake Forest. So tell us a little bit about your background and how early you started golfing and obviously a lifelong passion for the game of golf.
Yeah, it's been a wonderful thing. I started golf when I was 7, and I graduated high school in 1971, so you can kind of do the math on that one.
I'm not doing that. I'm a gentleman. I'm not doing that.
I've been playing golf over 60 years at this point, and I love it, so it's great. I started as a kid at the Pasadena Golf Course. Our family had a family membership there, and we all started. I'm the youngest of 3 girls, so my mom, my dad, and my 2 sisters and I all started one summer in 1960. So we had, you know, and I played as a kid and enjoyed it, and then played on the high school team at Boca Ciega. So that was great fun. The sad part was, of course, that I played with about 6 or 7 other fellas regularly over there. We practiced, and then when it came time for the match on Friday, I wasn't allowed to play because, quote, I was a girl. Even though I teed off of the same tee boxes as they did, and at that time was equally competitive with all of them. So by the time I got to Wake Forest, I wasn't too enamored of hearing about, well, we don't have a women's golf team, we just have a men's golf team. So I kind of raised a lot of hell about that and got the team started up at Wake Forest in 1972-ish.
Was that about the time you thought, maybe I need to pursue a career in law so that you can have some leverage? Because, you know Janie, and so do I, Janie Sermons. She actually went to St. Pete High, where she was the captain of the boys' team. And, geez, that wasn't that far removed from 1972. It came a long ways, and I know, you know, Title IX, but I bet that inspired you to get some things accomplished and have some leverage, like the knowledge of a law degree.
Absolutely. Well, and I had always kind of in my head wanted to be a lawyer. I had been involved in helping with as a volunteer and seeing the ladies pro tour as it existed then back in the early 60s, which was a bunch of dedicated ladies putting their clubs in their cars and driving, you know, station wagons and driving around the country and playing, but not really making much of a living unless you were maybe a handful of people like Mickey Wright, and a handful made an actual living, but the others were basically scraping by. So it was pretty obvious to me, you better have a career that was, gave you a little bit more ability to take care of yourself and your financial needs. And golf could be a wonderful hobby and amateur sport that I could, enjoy my entire life, and in business as well, which it's been a wonderful thing for us too.
You know, when you take a look, so you go to Wake Forest. Anybody that follows the game of golf knows the incredible history. Arnold Palmer, Curtis Strange, Lanny Watkins, Jay Haas. And you're there during that Watkins and Curtis Strange era. That had to really piss you off, actually. They're getting so much recognition. All you want is an opportunity to assemble some girls. You're probably not even looking for scholarship money at that point.
There was none.
And the word inclusion wasn't a much used statement in many areas in America then. And you were a pioneer to battle that.
Yeah, you are very correct about that. What occurred was, we just basically, several of us that knew we had okay games, we certainly weren't recruited for golf because there was no such thing as a team at that time, no such thing as Title IX scholarships. But that happened just as I was at Wake Forest. So by the time I graduated, they in fact were beginning to grant the first few handful of scholarships and actually go out and look for people that had that skill as an opportunity to support their college education. I was there on an academic scholarship, fortunately, and I had to make all A's and B's or I didn't get my scholarship. And of course, hitting the books was number one, but it was really interesting to see, they were the men's NCAA champions while I was at Wake Forest. So all those chaps, they had privileges at all the excellent country clubs in town, practice balls, uniforms, you know, you name it, all this fancy stuff. We didn't even get so much as a set of practice balls. You had to go find your way with somebody who had a car, which back in the day when you, you know, lived in the dorm and walked to class, you had to find somebody with a car that would take you out to a little local golf course where one of the local pros felt sorry for us and gave us free practice balls, and that was it on the practice range. And then a lady that was paid by the school for gas mileage to drive us to tournaments. So that was the beginning of the team.
You know, I'm working right now with Clemmy Perry, and I don't know if you're familiar with Clemmy. She founded the Women of Color Golf Foundation, and this sounds similar to, you know, some of the stories that she and I shared the other night when we were at an event with the Florida Sports Hall of Fame. And actually, I believe it is the 50th anniversary, my math, which is not always accurate, for Title IX being passed, isn't it?
Correct. I think that was last year. I think that occurred in actually.
I'm usually a year behind.
Yeah. It's either 22 or 21. It's right in there. But, you know, so, and obviously anytime a major law is passed, to get it actually implemented on the ground in places, you can't start programs out of nothing. You have to start somewhere. And so, you know, it took a while. It took several years before, you know, they were actually recruiting a few lady tennis players, young gals that were great at golf or whatever those sports were, where they had those opportunities. And that was really, you know, coming along in the mid to late 70s by the time it really started to get a foothold in place. So I saw it beginning, even just with my law school career. When I started at FSU Law School, I believe it was one woman to 10 men students. And by the time I graduated in just 3 years, it was something like 40%. So it's just amazing how quickly some of those, you know, things started to take hold and started to change. And I saw a lot of that in my own personal experience.
You're listening on the Tee on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network from the Ferg's Sports Bar and Grill in 19th Hole Studios. The Big O, Oscar Garner, and of course, talking to Beth Daniel down here. And not Daniels, but you have a great...
No, you got it. You got it backwards now. I've got the S.
You got the S. She does. Yes, sorry. Well, I'm usually backwards, too. Anyway, let's talk about your opportunity to actually golf with her.
Yes, I did. First of all, when I was in college at Wake Forest, because there were little golf programs existing for women teams at that time, Furman University, which is where the famous Beth LPGA Hall of Famer went to school, they had an invitational tournament every year called the Carolinas Open. So I think she's 2 years younger than I. So when I was a junior and senior, she was a freshman and sophomore. And so I didn't play head up with her, but I played in tournaments that she was at. And then also many years later, not too many, but some years later here in the Tampa Bay area, if you remember the JCPenney Classic that would team up a LPGA pro and a PGA pro, and you know, they would make a team, and then there was always a pro-am event. So I played with Beth Daniel on a couple occasions in that pro-am tournament, which was kind of fun. And I gotten lots of freebies by people that think I'm the other Beth. I come to some club and they go, "Oh, we're so honored to have you play. It's on us." I just smile and go to the first tee and I hope that I don't miss one, you know.
I would have rolled with it if I was you.
You bet.
But I bet it was a bit confusing for the officials from time to time as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So it's like, you know, they're coach calls my coach and says, "What are we going to do with the scoreboard? It looks like we have two girls with the same name or almost." And my coach said, "Well, don't worry about it. We call our Beth Buns." So on that scoreboard that day, I was Buns and she was Beth.
Oh my. Well, I don't need the history of your nickname, but that's a nice and simple one, the kind I'd probably
as some of my friends say, it's one of my better assets.
Now you're fitting in down the tee, because we like to insert a lot of humor on this show. All right, now, I had shared with you my fortune of spending an entire 18 holes with Arnold Palmer, and actually conversations on three occasions in Des Moines, Iowa, when he came in town for Champions events. But certainly being a Wake Forest grad, your story makes mine look like chump change times a thousand, but it's a superb story, and I'd like you to share it with our audience.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've unfortunately never had the good luck to actually play around with Arnold, but I was introduced to him many years after I graduated from Wake Forest, and I gather in recognition of the fact that I had been instrumental in making the women's golf team get its start. I was nominated by Wake Forest for a national honor called the Rolex Award. They nominate each Division I team, gets to nominate a one-woman graduate and one-man graduate, and it's a national thing. So at one point in time in 1999, I was the recipient. And the idea is you were on the college golf team, but you went on to a successful career in something totally different. So I got nominated. I won the national award for the women and was invited back to the Wake Forest campus for an entire weekend. My parents and I flew. This was 1999, so I'd already been out of law school 20 years. So went back to Winston-Salem and had a whole weekend when I was able to interact and have dinner with Arnold Palmer. His wife, Winnie, was still alive. So my mom sat next to Winnie at the dinner table and my dad next to Arnold, and the college president was there and the head of the athletics department was there and the winner of the men's division. And anyway, it was quite a weekend. It was very exciting. It was the year that Arnold had finished his biography. So he gave my dad a autographed copy of his autobiography. And they sat and chatted all evening, you know, through this whole weekend. And at the awards ceremony, Rolex Corporation presents both of the winners with an actual beautiful Rolex watch, which Arnold presented to me. So that was a pretty cool thing. It was a very, very exciting day for me and, of course, for my family. And if a daughter could ever give something to her dad that would make him proud of his little girl, that was it. So I was pretty lucky.
And how did he sign it? I think you told me it was pretty cool how he signed it, too.
Oh, well, he autographed the book. I got a copy of the book, and my dad got a copy of the book, and he, you know, signed it personally on the introduction page, you know, to him, and then congratulations for the award and that kind of thing. So that was really special.
As you and I shared,
super guy.
Oh my gosh! As you and I shared, and I actually was in the golf cart alongside him for those 18 holes, very casual. It was an Arnold Palmer signature course, the Tournament Club of Iowa in Polk City, Iowa, just north of Des Moines, believe it or not, have a track of that caliber. Anyway, I don't care if they were 7 or 77, you get up on each tee box, as you're well aware of, and he'd shake your hand, and he'd look at you, and ask you how you're doing. And he was sincere. I mean, I've never seen a man with that much worldwide stature be that sincere, and he wanted to hear, you know, how are you doing?
Yeah, oh yeah. And the most, you know, strong, friendly handshake, not like he was trying to crush your hand by any means, but just
firm.
You know,
he gave
you a grip, and he looked you square in the eye, and it was like, for those however many minutes you were engaged in talking to him, he made you feel like you were the most important person to him at that moment. And just the most genuine, warm person you ever want to meet.
And like many golfers or professional athletes, he had some monstrosities for hands. He had some paws on him.
Oh, man. Oh, the forearms. He looked like a blacksmith.
Oh, did he? Yeah. But
Popeye.
Oh, exactly. Hey, I don't know if you saw this week on the LPGA, they made the announcement that the 13 founders of the LPGA were finally going to get into the Women's Hall of Fame, the Golf Hall of Fame. And I think that is another statement on inclusion that needs to take place, because without their hard work, and of course you did the same thing with the golf program up there at Wake Forest.
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing. And of course, growing up in St. Pete, I don't know if you remember this. If you were from this area, maybe you don't know these stories. But
I've been here, way back, I've been here 7 years.
Yeah, back in the day, it's now the Vinoy Golf Course or Club, but it was called Sunset Country Club. And the ladies had an annual tournament there, I believe, called the Orange Blossom Open. And anyway, but I mean, literally as a 7, 8, 9 year old, I got to see Mickey Wright and Marilyn Smith and Louise Suggs and, you know, the ones that you're talking about that are, that basically were, you know, the foundation of the women's professional side and tour. So that was pretty cool that I got to meet some of them and get their autographs when I was only a 7 or 8 year old. That kind of inspired me too. And actually, I think, I believe I'm correct on this, and she may have been an amateur because I tried to look up and see about her professional career wins. But, you know, this week is, I still call it the Dinah Shore. This week is the week they play out in Rancho Mirage, the ladies do.
The last time it's going to be there.
Exactly. I know they have Chevron now as a corporate sponsor, but I still think of it as the Dinah because she did so much for women's golf. But, Amy Alcott was the first one to jump in the pond afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, do the famous sploosh. I am 90% sure that Amy won her first real tournament at Pasadena Golf Club because I was there.
Really?
Now, she may have still been in amateurs because when you look up her record, they say, you know, she won the DeMaria Classic or whatever, which is the actually like the Canadian Open. But she won a tournament at Pasadena Golf Course. And I could swear that was the first tournament she won. And maybe she was still a collegiate golfer. I don't remember exactly how that went down. But I know I was present on the 18th green when she won a tournament at Pasadena. And that would have been post, or you're right, like around the time I was in law school, or maybe even when I was still at Wake Forest. So it would have been in the late 70s sometime.
What do they call that pond?
Poppy's Pond.
Poppy's Pond, yeah. In fact, it used to be an actual pond.
Yes, and it was pretty gross. And they were worried about somebody getting sick from the bugs and stuff if they jumped in, because it was really just a, you know, retention pond. It was pretty gross. But they have now made that side of the area of the course a separate actual pool, so it's clean.
It's a cement pond, as they said on the Beverly Hillbillies, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Pot passers and meat stickers, right?
Exactly. But that's a great tradition. And I'll tell you what, I've been watching that most of the week. What a superb track. And it's sad. It's sad that it's going to be moving from that area. It's become a mainstay. You know, and I'm just a couple years behind you. I always thought, first of all, I thought Dinah Shore was hot, you know, when I was a kid. And then she was just so gracious, and she had such passion for that event.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the, you know, first people to really put some money behind saying, look, they need to get a decent prize check, you know, when they win, and really get behind that and really promoting the entire tour. Just been, you know, she was a great supporter and obviously a very, you know, dedicated person. When she put her mind to something, she could pull it off, and she really did. It gave them a big leap forward, without a doubt.
You know, we're having a conversation here right now with Bette Daniels, and we're talking a lot about inclusion and whether it's race, gender, and a huge statement being made, and this is the third annual, is up in Augusta this weekend, where you've got the U.S. Women's Amateur at Augusta National, and that was some major breaking ground, you know, when Catalina Rice got involved with the good old boys club. That was a big stride. But to have the women's amateur the week before the Masters was one heck of a statement on the world is changing. Am I correct?
You bet. I mean, and Jennifer Kupcho, who's a Wake Forest grad, who's on that very, you know, the continuation of the very team we started, was the first winner of that amateur at Augusta two years ago.
She's in third today, so she's sitting right. sitting right there, dear.
Yeah. Not only that, but we saw her and walked around at the Pelican right up here in Bel Air Bluffs, where I'm sitting today. I'm trying to think what month it was. I think it was in November when they had the. You know, Kupcho was in that, so I got to follow her around for a round.
Well, that's a great event, and doesn't get enough pub. And I hadn't launched the golf show yet, and I remember doing my radio show, and I'm thinking, I need to look for some content at the local level. And I'm thinking, you know what, you buffoon, you're acting just like the rest of the media. You've got some unbelievable women up there, just about 20 minutes from where I live on Sunset Beach. I thought, You couldn't have better access.
I mean, you know, of course, Brittany Lincecum, who graduated from Seminole High School, lives right here. She was in that tournament. Korda won it, who's the number one in the world, you know. So, I mean, of course, the very first year they held that tournament was during COVID. So that, you know, really did put a damper on, you know, the ability for the crowd and all. But I think that will grow beautifully as a real element on the LPGA Tour, because it's a beautiful course and easy access for those people here in Pinellas County. So, well, and of course, the Valspar too. I mean, all those things. I wish they still had the Pennies Pro-Am, which was, I mean, not just the Pro-Am, but the Pennies Tournament with the team of the man pro and the lady pro. It was just fantastic. Wish they'd get back to a format for that.
And I wish they had the Champions Tour out back, because I love watching those guys, because that's, you know, obviously yours and my generation on the men's PGA Tour. You know, you brought up Nellie Korda and Jessica Korda from Bradenton, and currently she slipped to number two in the world because they discovered a blood clot in her arm, and she's not able to play this week at the Chevron, unfortunately. But what a story that is. You know, at one point, number one in the world, her sister, number 13 in the world, and then she wins the gold medal. And heck, they're 25 minutes from my spot down there by the bridge. That's a great story in itself. And the dad was a professional tennis player.
Yep, terrific. Yep, they were with their daughters on the golf course up here in Bel Air in that tournament recently. That was great. And of course, I mean the achievement that the current number one, Ji-Yen Ko, has is unbelievable. I mean, I forget the exact number, but she just missed it the other day. She had had something like, was it 17 consecutive rounds in the 60s in tournament play?
I think I've had about 10 of those recently. I play
first nine, right?
No, I play at Smuggler's Cove up there on Gulf Boulevard. It's a challenging track. It's got
the windmill.
The windmill. You got live gators there too. So I really take a lot of concentration with those mini gators there. So I'm pretty proud of that record. I think it's probably 12 in the 60s.
Good job.
Oh yeah, that gives you an indication of the caliber of my game. So Gary Sermons was kind enough to introduce us, and his sister Janie had conversations with her, and she's up in New York giving lessons now. But they also gave me the history of the Sunset Course down at Vinoy, and I was thinking, Sunset Course, am I missing something? I've only been there 7 years. I live on Sunset Beach. I know there's a little par 3 track down there, 9-hole. But when did it convert to the Vinoy?
Well, I'm not sure exactly, but, you know, the Vinoy Hotel itself was closed for, I don't know, since the real depression in the 30s, all the way until the 1980s or early 90s, sometime mid-80s at least. That hotel was boarded up. And Sunset Golf Course, which is out there on Snell Island, in the northeast neighborhood of St. Petersburg, was a private club and a nice course for people that lived in that part of town. And I think the hotel reopened. You'd have to look that piece up. I think it would be sometime in the mid-80s, late-80s. And when that happened, I believe that the hotel then affiliated with that golf course. But the course has been there. The course has been there and since the 40s, probably maybe even before that. So it's... right there in Snell Isle, so not out at the beach, not that sunset.
No. Hey, well, before I let you go, how often do you get out these days? I know you're still got a heavy schedule, of course, with the duties of being a lawyer.
Yeah, I play. Oh, I may play once a week or every other week at least. I play with a ladies group at Bel Air Country Club where I belong, and I also play in a lot of local charity tournaments. So I try to get out pretty frequently. I think I'm 9.7 right now, something like that. So I'm hovering around the 10 handicap, which isn't too bad.
No, it's fabulous. In fact, I'll probably be getting a hold of you. I get invited to some of these events, and I'm going to scratch myself and insert you so that you represent on the tee and your law firm, and I'm not embarrassed any longer. How about that?
I think we should be on the team together so we can...
Well, so you can have some humor during the course of your round?
Yeah, that's right. We need comic relief.
She wants a sandbag.
Yeah, I can certainly bring that to the table, dear. Well, Beth, yeah, I appreciate
you. Bring a high handicap, okay?
Well, I don't have to bring it. It's there. Should I bring one of my Smuggler's Cove's golf cards, my scorecards to prove it?
Yeah, exactly. I want to see all those hole-in-ones on through the clown's mouth and through the windmill.
All right, dear. Well, have a great weekend. Enjoy watching the Chevron. And someday I'll get to meet you. Maybe you come down here and we'll have Gary and have a bite to eat and shoot the breeze.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you so much for inviting me and for, you know, just, you know, somebody else that shares a love of the game and the ability to keep on playing through all phases of your life, which is the wonderful thing about golf. So thanks and have a great day.
Yeah, and you were a superb guest as we talk about inclusion in the women's game. My good friends at the Women of Color Golf Foundation, you know, what they're aspiring to do. So they need a lot more women like you.
Thanks so much. You take care.
All right. Have a great day.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
That was a nice conversation, young man.
No, that was beautiful. It's great having her on here.
Okay. Now, I want to properly introduce you again. Michigan State grad.
Yes, sir.
Spartan. Mm-hmm. You weren't too happy with your Sparties, but
look, it was revenge. We knocked them off in 2019. We got them with Zion a couple years ago. So they were just getting their licks back. It's all good. It's all good.
So now you're pulling for Coach K.
Oh no. Oh no no no. I want him retired.
Come on, man.
I need him out of here. Come on now.
Rich in tradition.
I'm an Izzo guy. I only root for one good coach.
But who do you like to win it all?
Right. I mean, I used to like Nova, but they got their guard out.
He's out,
and it's not looking too hot. But with that, I think it's wide open for Kansas right now. I really do.
Well, Bill Self, he needs one in Lawrence, you know. It's just like in Lexington. They want those championships, and they haven't had one in Lawrence for quite some time. So let's talk about how we met.
Sure.
So I was sitting there flapping my jaws like I do every Saturday, and this good-looking young man, about 6'1,000 walks by and he's videotaping, and I was interested in that because we're launching a platform where we've launched it, Hoovy.tv, and it'll start being more video. And so we started having a conversation. I realized how articulate and bright you are, and I need young talent. And don't take offense to this, but the last thing I thought you were going to start talking about is golf. Not too many young guys talk golf anymore. You know, it had a nice window.
Right.
There's the Tritons in the house. It has a great appeal to my generation. Tiger Woods re-inspired a younger generation, but your pops got you into the game at a young age.
Yeah, I mean, my dad was influential in almost everything. My self-starter nature, everything about me came from my dad. So, you know, when he put me on the golf, put me on the caddying. Actually, I'll tell you exactly how I got into it. I got too tall for the house. I got to eating up too much food, and my dad said, you need a job. Out of nowhere, I got an email from Oakland Hills Country Club saying, your interview is in a week. I had no clue. But in a week, I showed up at Oakland Hills Country Club. I was about 14, walked out there, and to be honest, the rest was history. Been working there. I think that's the longest job I've ever had. But being at that course for 6-plus years taught me a lot. Taught me about golf, taught me about self-respect, taught me about being a self-starter. And really changed my life. The game of golf is something that's kind of lost in our generation. But like you said, you know, it appeals to those guys who are a little bit older. But I'm lucky enough to be passed down. You know, I'm Oscar Grunner III. So senior and junior passed that down to me for sure.
You got big shoes to fill. You're the third. Doing many of your buddies play the game?
Yeah. So I'm part of actually...
that's cool.
I'm actually part of an organization called the Evan Scholar Foundation. And we're all caddies who got full ride scholarships to college off of being caddies in Michigan.
Oh, my word. That's impressive.
So that organization is full of guys who are, if we don't have anything in common, the one thing we all share is a love for the game of golf.
That is very cool. Of course, if you're not familiar with Oakland Hills, he's going to give you the history.
Sure.
And the tradition that is Oakland Hills. And unfortunately, what just took place going on a couple months ago now, isn't it?
Yeah, it might even be a little bit fresher than that. But, you know, Oakland Hills is tradition, and tradition is Oakland Hills. I think when you think of the classic golf course, the classic clubhouse, you know, that clubhouse is the second largest wooden structure in Michigan, well, formerly, second largest wooden structure in Michigan. Holds a lot of golf culture, established back in the early 1900s, and we've hosted everything from Ryder Cups, Opens, women's tournaments. I mean, we had the U.S. Amateur in 2016, which I caddied in. So golf tradition is Oakland Hills.
You caddied in that amateur? You caddied in it?
Yeah, I'm still USGA eligible right now. I can go out there and put the bib on if I wanted to.
go out there and make a few bennies and get your pass, and then you can go to the event.
I'm actually going to shout out my guy, Zach Justice. Zach was the guy I caddied for. He probably won't be calling me up anytime soon because we missed the cut by a couple strokes. But
yeah, and everybody blames the caddy, right?
Of course. I mean, I'm the home team, so they kind of depend on you to know it. But Zach was a freshman golfer out of Richmond at the time,
and he was a spider.
Yeah, go roll spy. So he was a golfer down in Richmond. He came up to play. He was a freshman, young guy. I think we were about 2 years apart in age, but we really clicked, hit it off, and we just fell apart on the last day. But we played some really good golf, and I could go out there and caddy for him at any time. I'm going to shout out Zach. Hopefully he'll see this.
Now, how tall are you?
6'5".
Okay, now most golfers aren't much taller than 6'1".
Right.
You might, as a caddy, you might have intimidated some of these cats.
I'm definitely the biggest guy out there on the course for the most part.
Okay, so you were sharing a story with me, a couple of celebrities in the entertainment world. Well, they're both entertainment, but in the sports world and, of course, in film. And share that story with them because I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I can go down a long laundry list of guys.
That's what we're here to share stories, man.
So the biggest one I know we hit it off was Jimmy Butler, and which I'm a huge fan. If you can tell, if I take my hat off, I got the Jimmy Butler cut on right now, actually.
Oh, my God. My son would love you in Denver. He's a Jimmy Butler guy.
I should have came down here with my 22 jersey on. But Jimmy Butler came to the course, I think it was around 2018. Mark Wahlberg was there with him. And a lot of people don't know, those guys have a really good friendship based on golf, basically. They've been around all through the Midwest playing different courses.
Did they meet, like, at a pro-am?
I didn't get the background on that, but the chemistry. I mean, those guys were, like, they were, like, just regular golf buddies like you and me.
Well, no, not you and me. You'd be carrying me. I can make some putts and chip, but...
I'll get us on the green. Don't worry about it.
That's all I need. We're going to play some golf together. We're playing some of these... We're finally playing some NFL... events, and I'll show up with you, and then be like, hey, you had to go into the youngster.
Had to dip into draft. The young bag.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
So, this shocked me. Mm-hmm. You said that Butler is a hack, and Wahlberg was the stick.
Wahlberg off the first tee roped it.
Really?
Roped it.
He's a pretty good. He looks like a good athlete.
He's a built guy. He's an athlete. You know. When I brought it up to my mom, she was like, wait, Mark Wahlberg from the underwear guy, Mark Wahlberg, is that no way.
Underwear guy. I wouldn't have thought of that. I would have, you know, but I don't think about men in their underwear, but
yeah,
your,
I don't
your mother,
either, you
your
know.
Mother, ma'am. I would think that Jimmy Butler, the brash, you know, I like his personality. Was he with Miami then, or the Bulls?
No. This is back in the Bulls. This is before all the Timberwolves stuff.
Well, happened. I'm a Bulls fan, so I prefer him to be Bulls. So he was Bulls, Timberwolves, and always Miami.
No, he went from Timberwolves to Philly. He was in Philly for a year.
I forgot about that.
That was a dog year. They had a good team that year. It was Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris. That was a stacked team. Then he went down to Miami and went to the finals the next year.
Exactly. I forgot about that. So, cool cat.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was already biased because I love Jimmy, but yeah, he's a cool guy. He's kind of a clown. He's got a great sense of humor.
Wahlberg?
Wahlberg, same way, but he seemed a little bit focused in on the game. He seemed like he had a mission that day, so.
Were they just playing together, or was it a pro-am? What was it?
No, it was super casual. I think it was like a middle of the week, too. It wasn't even on the weekend. It was like a Wednesday or a Thursday. It was a slower day, maybe around 10, which is when the course gets real slow. You know, the early guys go out, and they were just out there having at it. I think they had went out with a member, you know, because
it's a private club, right?
Oakland Hills is as private as it gets. So to get, I mean, you got to know somebody to get out there. So they were out there with a member.
It's not Augusta type private, but it's
no, not Augusta type private, but it's definitely up there. It's got a rich history, and if you go to Michigan for golf, you're going to Oakland Hills.
a rich history, and you got to be rich to be there.
Definitely. I can't even get into the type of money, the type of tips, money spent in that place. It's ridiculous, honestly.
Okay. Now, last week I had Lynn, the Growler Strickler, ranked in the top 30 of all time on the tour, and he wrote a column for Sports Illustrated, and it's hilarious. It's back in the 80s, and he talked about the Bob Hope event, and you won't even know some of these names, but who were the good tippers and who weren't.
Uh-huh.
And Bob Hope, who I always thought was a great humanitarian, said he was the cheapest, worst tipper. Jackie Gleason, and this is your grandfather would know that name. Jackie Gleason also had a tournament, and Jackie Gleason, there's Jesuit guys, and Jackie Gleason would huge tipper. We're talking in the 80s, C notes. What's a typical tip for you? Or do they put it on their membership and you get it at the end of the round?
It's a membership type thing, but you're definitely out there working for it. Some guys will stiff you. It usually goes, there's a flat rate, and then you tip on top of the flat rate.
It's just ridiculous.
Isn't it? You guys pay $75,000 to get in here, and you want to pay me $25,000? Come on now.
yeah, and you're loaded.
Yeah.
And I'm a college kid, high school kid, busting my ass, and you want to walk away and not tip me?
You want to hear the worst part? When you hear him spend $300 on drinks at the turn. That's the worst part.
Oh, my God.
And then you got to eat a hot dog at the halfway.
Three years ago before I decided to get back on the mic, there's probably people listening right now, wish I didn't. But anyway, I was a cart jockey at the St. Pete Country Club. Mm-hmm. I'm 62, 63 years old. And there were those kind of guys, I didn't hold back.
You
guys would go to hand me a buck or $2, I walk away.
I don't need that.
Keep it, man. They're getting in a Benz worth about, 90. I'm looking at their sticks, they're probably worth about, $1,500.
Right.
Here's a buck or two. No, keep it. You need it that bad? The pro comes to me. He goes, man, you got to quit those comments. I go, well, then I'm quitting.
I'm quitting, yeah.
I said, I'm an old man. I just do this for the free golf, and I'm not going to be disrespected like that. And you'd be stunned how many guys, well, you wouldn't be stunned, just do that.
I definitely wouldn't. I definitely.
You would think they'd feel sorry for an old man.
You know, it's there's the stiffers. There's the cheap guys. But. I will say Oakland Hills has been very nice to me when it comes to it's what you get out of it. You put into that course and you'll definitely get the money out. I had you might recognize his name, Brian Scandalaris. He owns the practice facility at Michigan State for the football team, and I caddy for him in a 4-day tournament.
Where do you make his money at? That name is familiar.
I'm actually not sure, but
he's got some jack.
I mean, he owns the practice facility, so
yeah,
but I'm caddying for this guy. We get to the end, he knows I'm a Spartan, he knows I love my team, hands me an envelope, $1,500. That's not even the best part. It's not even the best part.
$1,500?
It's a 4-day tournament. $1,500.
Cash?
Cash.
For you.
Now, is the IRS listening to this? Because I think I owe somebody some money.
Hell no.
So that wasn't even the best part. I open it up and it's a ticket to Ohio State, Michigan State to get on the field.
Oh, my
yes,
God.
Sir. At home in East Lansing.
Well, you've lived a blessed young life.
Oh, yeah. I could tell you some stories. I've seen. I helped Justin Verlander.
1,500 large.
I helped Justin Verlander find his phone. He gave me $50.
Oh, my God. That is 1,500. Did any other cat? Did you keep that to yourself?
That's honestly might have been the low ball out of the hustlers there. I mean, you got some guys cracking 2,025 with the skins, dude. With the skins that are played at these tournaments, cracking 2,2500 on a week.
What? Oh my word!
Yes,
your old man probably said, from now on, all the groceries are coming out of your cash flow.
After that, all my clothes, everything was coming out of my cash flow, everything.
That's what I would have done to my son. One was Michael, my oldest, was he worked for TaylorMade and Callaway while he was playing college golf, D2 in Kansas City. And he worked these events at two country clubs. Mm-hmm. He's coming home with the Bennies. I'm like, are you kidding me? Yeah, and he wasn't a cat. He's working the front desk, and then he's doing fittings. And he'd fit a guy for a particular, sticks. Next thing you know, he's handing him a Benny. Unbelievable.
Did you start treating him like a tenant after that, or was he still your son?
You know what? I wish I was as tough as your dad. It would have saved me a lot of jack. Yeah. I back in the day, I needed to talk to your pops. Coach Carter from the movies, a good friend of mine, and he met my boys, and he said, the way he treated his son is, I wish I would have got his lesson. Yeah. I was a little soft on him.
Yeah.
Just from that perspective, I was because I never had any cash as a kid, so I'm like, I don't want them to be, you know, without cash. And I know they're walking around with Benny Franklin's, and then it just the off.
Yeah, as soon as my dad saw Mr. Franklin, he was like, yeah, it's game's over. Changed now.
Oh, yeah. Well, it should be. All right, well, I we're going to have you on a lot, and I think you'd enjoy it. You can bring some new young thoughts, because we need to grab that demographic,
definitely.
Oscar. Definitely. And I think you could help me out there. And you actually know more about the game of golf. You're better than I am. So this might end up being on the tee with the O will stand for Oscar on the tee.
Oh, yeah, the big O. Yes,
with
sir.
The big O.
The biggest O.
Yeah. We'll have a lot of fun doing that. What are you going to do the rest of the weekend? I want to thank your friend here. Who's
friend,
this?
My friend DeAndre came down.
DeAndre,
to
thank you very much, young man.
Today, sir.
Got a couple of young, good-looking young men down here. My future bodyguards, if anybody jumps me down here on Central.
I got you. You let them know.
Okay, I'll let them know. You both live right here?
Right here, Fusion, right here.
Okay, I'll be speed dialing you. Get down here. In fact, for Rays games, just look me up, and I'll hook you up over there. You guys ever want to go to a ball game?
Beautiful. Yeah, appreciate it.
Got a deal with Coca-Cola. All right, man. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.